Welcome to Drive Time, our UCLA Anderson fully employed MBA podcast. This is Dylan Stafford, your host, and we have a very special alum this week. Kimberly Freeman is with us, and I say special for several reasons. I think you're going to enjoy hearing her career path because she's made some bold and different moves and really created a unique history in her own career. And also she now works here at UCLA. So to formally introduce Kimberly, she is our Assistant Dean for Diversity Initiatives and Community Relations for us here at UCLA Anderson. And in this position, she leads our school's strategic efforts to promote diversity and inclusiveness for all members of the school and to strengthen relationships with the broader community. Prior to coming back to Anderson to work, Kimberly worked at Southern California Gas Company as Director of Community Relations. In addition to her professional work in the community, Kimberly is passionate about public service. She serves as a gubernatorial appointee on the board of California Volunteers. She is a mayoral appointee on the Housing Authority of the City of Los Angeles Board of Directors, and she is a trustee of Mount St. Mary's University here in Los Angeles. By way of introduction, we'll say hello to our listening audience.
Hello, listening audience.
Thank you so much for being with us. And why don't we start with a little bit about sort of, your prior education, where you grew up, anything like that. And then we'll start to talk about your career because you've had such an interesting one before coming back to Anderson.
Well, thank you, Dylan. I always like to start off by saying that I'm a native of Los Angeles. I'm really proud to be a native of the city, and so that's something I like to highlight in my background. In addition, I'm a product of public schools. I went to many of LA's finest public schools and had the opportunity to go to not only UCLA, but also UC Berkeley, where I earned my first degree in engineering and did a minor in business. And then when I came back to Los Angeles from college, I decided that I was really interested in working in the public policy arena. And it was a natural fit for me because I was working for Southern California Gas Company at the time, which is a regulated investor-owned utility. So I had the opportunity to learn a lot about how regulations impact business. So I went back to graduate school first in public policy, and then did my master's here at UCLA in business.
So you because your bachelor's degree at Berkeley is a BS in industrial engineering, as you said. And so when did you start to see this, bigger than engineering horizon for yourself?
Probably when I was an undergrad. I was very active in the National Society of Black Engineers when I was at Cal, and I had an opportunity to interact with a lot of different people from different schools around the country, and I saw that my engineering skills could be used in many different ways, and I really got interested in organizational behavior and organizational design. So that's why I did, it was actually not a minor program, but it was an additional suite of classes as an engineering major in another part of the campus, and so I chose business so that I could learn some of the skills that I would later revisit when I got my MBA. So I had already had my eye on shifting out of engineering when I was an undergrad.
And before we get to your MBA, because of course that's the one I want to talk about. So when you earned your master's in public policy, were you working or were you a full-time grad student?
I've always worked when I went to school, even when I was an undergrad. Certainly, I didn't work as many hours as I work now, but I've always had to work to put myself through school. When I was in graduate school, I did the part-time program at USC in public policy. And what I really liked about that program was we had something called intensives, which allowed us to go to school on the weekends. So I was already familiar with that format when I came to UCLA as a FEMBA. So I took several classes in the intensive format, and that allowed me to essentially earn my master's degree in the same amount of time that someone would if they were studying full time.
And were you with SoCal Edison? That
gas company. Yeah, I was with Southern California Gas Company.
Sorry, I always get it confused. Yeah. And then, because I think one thing that people, I like to have our guests talk about sort of when did the, to get more specific to our degree, when did the MBA start to be on your horizon? Had it already started in undergrad, or was it after that? When did you start thinking, well, that's the graduate degree?
Well, I found about it in undergrad, absolutely. Like I said, I was able to take some business courses when I was at Berkeley. I took classes at Haas. So I had that exposure. But what also triggered my interest in business was a conversation, quite frankly, that I had with an executive at the gas company, at our parent company, actually, Sempra, when I finished my MPP. He actually encouraged me to get the MBA because he said, you know, you're going to have a harder time kind of justifying that choice of an MPP in this environment. And I thought it was strange. I thought it was strange because I was working for a regulated utility, which is definitely an area where public policy skills are needed. But he was very practical. He actually had a law degree. And he was the one who, you know, really encouraged me to think about an MBA. And so when I was probably 10 years into my career at SoCalGas, I decided to get an MBA.
All right. So now we get to, for me, the million-dollar question. So did you, well, I mean, you already had one degree from USC, so you could have gone there. Your undergrad was Berkeley, could have flown up there. So you chose Anderson. So do you remember anything about your choice group, or is it too far back?
No, I remember vividly. So my career is very interesting at the gas company. And while I might not be as sharp on the dates anymore because I'm now getting seasoned in my my career, when I was at SoCalGas, I took a job in San Francisco, actually. I worked as a lobbyist. So I was an energy lobbyist for about 3 years. And during that time, we had the California energy crisis, which was obviously a very intense period for not only the companies that were regulated by the California Public Utilities Commission, but for our consumers as well, who were subjected to this very volatile time in the energy markets. And so
was that Enron and the rolling brownouts, or was that different?
It was definitely the rolling blackouts, but it was related to a particular policy decision that our state legislature had made in around 1998, I think it was, to deregulate a portion of the electric industry. And so that subjected some customers in San Diego, the San Diego area, to market prices instead of having regulated energy prices. And in that, in the course of that, lifting the rate cap, to not sound too technical, but in the process of lifting that rate cap, customers' bills went up exponentially. And so we had a crisis there, kind of regionally, and we also had the rolling blackouts.
Okay. And I interrupted. I was, because the question I was asking was sort of, as you were looking at your MBA choices in California and you were picking Anderson.
So I chose Anderson while I was working in San Francisco.
Yeah, okay.
And I chose Anderson while I was working in San Francisco because in my mind, I always knew I was going to come back to LA. And it made more sense to me to align with a school that had alumni here in the Southern California area than to attend school in another part of the country or another part of the state. I did very seriously contemplate UC Berkeley, but I decided I already had a degree from there. And I really felt a connection to Anderson when I came to one of the open houses when I was contemplating business school.
Because I think one of the, you kind of set me straight a little bit, because I was probably in, you know, in my first couple of years in the recruiting, and I was so proud that we were starting at that point back in, I don't know, 03 or 04, 05, to have a lot of people flying down from the Bay Area. And I thought it was brand new. And you stood up at the open house and said, I actually commuted during my FEMBA experience. And I thought, oh, wow. Oh, okay. People have been doing this for a while. So
right.
So tell people if you remember anything about, you know, like how'd you balance all that? You know, you did all day Saturday, I guess.
I did all day Saturday once again. What's interesting is I wasn't the only student. There was another student who lived in Oakland, and he and I were both commuting, although he was in the process of moving to Southern California early in the degree program, so he eventually relocated. I didn't come back to Los Angeles until I think a year and a half into my program. So I spent the core part of the FEMBA program commuting between LA and the Bay Area, and it was tough. You know, it was easy in the sense that we didn't have the same airport security issues that we have now post 9/11. So that made things a lot easier for me in terms of getting, you know, on my airplanes and not missing my flights. But I was still working in the Bay Area Monday through Friday and then coming home Saturday and Sunday.
Wow. Yeah, I love the commitment level that I see people put into, you know, the historical all-day Saturday commuting. And now, you know, we have people from Boston and Seattle and New Orleans and Houston and Washington, D.C. and North Carolina in the flex schedule. Mm-hmm. And people just make it work. And it's so fantastic.
Well, I think there's something, you know, magical when you come on campus and you're in that Saturday only section. For me, I was so interested in what our professors were teaching. I was so interested in what my classmates were doing in their respective fields. We had people from aerospace and finance, and of course I was from energy, and we had some other folks that worked in the oil industry. So we had a nice mix of industries, and I'm just always been a curious person by nature. So it was a way to understand how other businesses made decisions, you know, in an environment that was sort of like a laboratory. So I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I love the laboratory metaphor, that you can experiment with different elements of your career as a FEMBA student. And that's such a, in real time, you know, oh, I want to expose myself to finance, or I want to, you know, I like that. You know, I'm going to go be spend 3 years as an energy lobbyist. You know, like, what a unique, I think one of the things I always liked about your career with the gas company was you seem to have really distinct chapters within one employer for a good period of time, but you did very different things within your career. Probably a combination of all three of your prior degrees gave you the chance. And then it also seems like you're pretty good at seeking mentors and getting some people to kind of help guide you.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that you might want to say about some of those forks in the road, you know, from your career that you think might be useful for people who are sort of in FEMBA or recent graduates who might be listening?
Sure. Well, on the importance of mentors and the mentors I've had in my life, I think I learned very early in my career at the gas company that you were going to be tapped on the shoulder for things that you might not have even seen, roles that you might not have even seen yourself doing. And so staying open, staying flexible, being open to the idea of being a lobbyist with an engineering background or being a community relations director, you know, with a public policy degree was something that was ingrained in me very early in my career by the mentors that I had at the company. I took a lot of different risk with my career because I could. I felt very confident when I was in that environment. I felt like people trusted that I knew what I was doing, and most of the time they were right. And I felt like I could be whatever, you know, job I was in. I felt like I could morph into that. So, I mean, I even sometimes think I've morphed, you know, to a new job coming here to Anderson because I had not formally worked in diversity and inclusion at Southern California Gas Company, but I had always worked on diversity and inclusion.
Well, I want to talk about that, but I just want to ask maybe before we, because I want to ask the question of, so what had you think to come back to Anderson? Because I'd love for people to hear that, because I want some of you on this call to come back in future chapters of your careers. You know, I think that's one of the richnesses of Anderson, obviously, is the people, and people participate for a season. It doesn't have to be a lifetime, but they come for 2 years or 4 years as faculty and as returning alum. But you mentioned confidence, and we welcome our class of 2019 on Monday, and I've been working on my opening remarks, and I love the three pillars of share success, think fearlessly, and drive change. And to my way of articulating that, it's sort of heart, head, and gut. Share success is the friendships that you make that become lifelong friendships. Obviously, think fearlessly, that's your head. You know, it's gray matter work. This is graduate school at UCLA. But the third pillar, the drive change, to my way of framing it, you know, that's that gut check. And so I'm just curious, when you say that you knew yourself to be someone who had the confidence to be willing to try new things, how do you think about confidence, and how did you see confidence in any of your 3 degrees, FEMBA or your public policy or your original engineering? I'm always curious, where does confidence come from? Is it just natural, or is it something that we can develop in ourselves? Because it seems to me, as I see your career, and you guys should look her up on LinkedIn. It's really fun to read her resume for Kimberly here. Like, anything about that you might say for people who are, you know, in this commitment to grow and develop during FEMBA?
Well, that's a good, it's a good question, and it's a good thing for me to really think about. So using the same share success, think fearlessly, and drive change. Growing up as the youngest in a family of eight, I think the sharing success was something that my parents taught us early. And so that confidence came from being the youngest of eight.
Wow. The youngest of eight.
Well, the youngest of six children and then two very loving parents. So growing up in a family, in a household of eight people, we had to share success in so many different ways. The thinking fearlessly, I've always been a big picture kind of person. And even when I went up to college, I was the first person kind of to go away to college in my family, if you will. And I didn't go very far. I only went up to the Bay Area. But it was just this idea that I could strike out on my own at 18 and try something new. So I think I've always challenged myself in that way. And thinking fearlessly is really about challenging yourself and finding where your limits are. And then driving change, that's really the compassionate side of who I am, the person that loves to volunteer in the community, that did a degree in public policy because I understand that nothing gets done in this world without some, you know, political intervention or policy intervention. So I was very clear that I needed to understand how, for example, Sacramento operated, how DC operated, how the city of LA operated, if not for my own quality of life, certainly for the quality of life for my family and my community. So those were really important steps that I took to become a very multifaceted person. So.
And I think hanging around Anderson, for me, having spent a decade plus here. Today's my 14-year anniversary of working at Anderson.
Congratulations.
I started, I think, the day before Leadership Foundations in 2002, or the day of Leadership Foundations. Something. It was fun to just walk in the door and see all of the excitement of Leadership Foundations. But yeah, you meet so many people here that you do develop a certain comfort level with, you know, not always understanding everybody's background, mm-hmm. but listening for the common, what's the common that we do have, even though we have such diversity of talent and education and cultural upbringing. And I think we have, I forget how many nationalities in the entering class, but it's always the United Nations over and over again. And I love that about this place. And what I want to suggest to people listening to the podcast, again, as you're in your own growth and development journey of FEMBA, the confidence just accrues. You know, you go through the core curriculum, you go through your first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, you got the first year under your belt, you're a third of the way through, you start the second year, you knock out two more core classes, then you transition into the elective phase, you start choosing your electives for a couple quarters, and then the Global Access Program kicks up, and there's all of the, you know, the kind of focus that requires. And then all of a sudden you're taking your last electives and you've gotten to the finish line. And where it exactly clicks, whoever knows, but it does happen that people just really transform their competence. You know, mm-hmm. They get the, we interviewed Dean Shee last week, and she talked about, you know, just developing analytical, critical thinking, confidence, and skills. So we really do think fearlessly, but then there's this holistic outcome that's kind of a growth of just being in this really stimulating community, and you get to know yourself to be a person who can be in a room full of smart people and still participate. So, anyway, sorry.
Well, no, there's lots of leadership theories out there, but the one that makes a lot of sense to me is, you know, leaders kind of go through stages, much like babies learn to crawl first, then walk, then run. Mm-hmm. And so in leadership, you learn to kind of work with ideas or work, first with things, and mm-hmm. then you learn to work with people, and then you learn to work with ideas. And so what makes an experience like Anderson unique is it takes you from kind of that crawling and walking stage to a place where you can run with ideas. Mm-hmm. And that's really, I think, what a leader is supposed to do, is to be able, you know, to be able to run with mm-hmm. those ideas and be able to express them in such a way that he or she can bring other people along.
Well, I want to talk about your appreciation of civic engagement, and I want to talk about sort of the why'd you leave the gas company and come back to Anderson, but I don't know which is the better order. Which one should we?
It's probably easier to take the career piece because the civic engagement is so broad and all-encompassing and will be with me for the rest of my life. But again, just using that metaphor of, you know, learning to kind of crawl before you walk, walk before you run. I spent so much of my formative career at the gas company. That's really where I got my wings. That's where I learned to be not only an individual contributor, but someone who led teams and worked across functions, worked with different organizations, and really was an ambassador for the company for many years. And I got to a point where I recognized that I could either leave it all there and continue to be successful in that environment, or I could push myself further, which is the thinking fearlessly, and try to do something that really got to my heart. So when you were talking about the head and the heart, and for me, education clearly is an important value that I hold. And coming back to a place that I earned a degree from, a place that's located in a city that I grew up in and a place that I love, was pretty much a no-brainer for me. It married a lot of my ideas about what we should be doing in society. So,
like I said, 2014 was great when all of a sudden you weren't here just, you know, once every quarter or once a month, but day in and day out. And I always appreciate our conversations because you're helpful for me to, sometimes you just need like a professional colleague who can help you be a sounding board. And I've always appreciated that about, I'll knock on your window. Hi, Kimberly, can I interrupt your afternoon for a minute? Because I have this idea, or I'll be, you know, kind of like, you just need people in your career that you can just talk to who aren't necessarily in your day-to-day sphere of things, but whose perspective you appreciate. And you're always that for me, and I always appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate it too. The feeling is mutual. And I remember yet another one of my mentors at the gas company said, you always need to be about three questions deep, you know, in any subject that you're undertaking, any job you're undertaking, I guess. And I think that being able to bounce ideas off of someone allows you to keep refining and, you know, going through iterations of your problem solving. So I'm like you. I have the same need to be able to talk to people and bounce things off of them, ask for clarification, you know, see if I'm missing something, if I have a blind spot. I think that comes with maturity. It's probably not something that we think of as being necessary early in our careers, but the older you get and the more miles you have on the road, you recognize you don't know everything, mm-hmm. and it's helpful to talk to people.
Yeah, really. We're hosting the part-time MBA Dean's Conference in October, and we'll have about 70 of the top 70 part-time schools will be in attendance, and Dean Margaret Shee and Gonzalo Fracius and Dean Olean is gonna welcome our guests, and I love the conversation. Plus, we have a bunch of staff, and mm-hmm. I love the conversations because there's no right way to run a conference,
right.
And all these people's opinions are legitimate, and they're grounded in having attended hundreds of conferences, and we really want to showcase the breadth and depth of UCLA, and it's just fun to listen to people think out loud. Well, should we do this or should we do that? And a little or a lot. And we don't want to brag about UCLA, but we don't want to forget to, you know, we have so much to share as one of the top five, you know, perennial top five nationwide, worldwide part-time programs. A lot of these schools, they are coming. They actually want to hear what we have to mm-hmm. say. But we get all diplomatic. Well, we don't want to look like we're bragging. You know, how much do we talk about GAP or the global immersions or the flex curriculum or any of these things we've done that have been very progressive and other schools look to us as a benchmark and a leader. Three questions deep, five questions deep.
Right. Yeah. No, I tell people that all the time. You need to be about three questions deep. And they say, what does that mean? But it just means, you know, don't believe you have the solution on the first try. Spend mm-hmm. some time, ask some questions, kick the tires.
You know, anything about, because your career really does speak to being engaged, being a citizen, being a participant, having, I think one time you told me, you know, this could be wrong. Did you tell me you're a really good auntie one time? You know, that, you know, in the sense of mentoring a lot.
I spend a lot of time with my nieces and nephews. Yes, I do.
Yeah. And that I think in your personal, but then your professional is an extension of that too. Being right. The community relations, the outward facing representation of, you know, the good intentions of the gas company. And now, you know, again, taking a very public leadership role at Anderson. So, you know, that's not always the way MBA, the average MBA might walk in the door thinking about what their career is going to be about. And I was hoping that an interview with you could possibly plant some seeds with people. Anything about the whole world of your career that you might suggest to someone who's in their MBA experience and is more focused on kind of the 1-2 job promotions in front of them, but hadn't really thought that they could also have this bigger impact?
Well, that's, again, I think the thinking fearlessly aspect of what we talked about earlier, that you have to think beyond, you know, the next promotion or think beyond the next job that you have. Really, what are you contributing to society? How are you going to measure your success and the things that you hold dear? And I think that it's very hard to do that when you're at certain points in your life because you really haven't had the wisdom of time and experience. But as you gain wisdom and or time and experience, you're able to see that there's a lot more that your skills could be used for than just, especially MBA skills, leadership and management skills. They're just so transferable to so many different organizational settings. I think when you were talking about, you know, my time at the gas company, my time here now with the piece of my job in community relations, I always treat everything like it's my family. You know, I feel very comfortable in large, diverse groups. And I feel like it's incumbent upon me to be the best ambassador I can be for, if it's UCLA Anderson or UCLA overall, or, you know, like I said, my own family or any of the organizations that I'm involved in. That's something that I don't take lightly. And my commitment to service, I'm sure, stems from the fact that I come from a family that originated in the segregated South and had a lot of experience with bias and not being able to have the opportunities that I had after my parents chose to move here to California. So I feel a tremendous obligation to represent this next generation of my family in making sure that, you know, I respect those opportunities and that I do something to keep the door open for someone.
Well, we're kind of coming up to the end of our podcast. Anything that we've not covered that you would like to include?
I think as a concluding comment for students who are really on the fence about what they want to do with their degree post Anderson, especially if they want to get into the social responsibility or, you know, social entrepreneurship space, that you do think of how your skills are going to be generalizable in society versus pigeonholing yourself into thinking that you have to stay in the lane that you came to school in. And I think one of the beauties of being in a diverse classroom where you have classmates that represent all the sectors, all the economic sectors, is that you can have a conversation with someone who maybe works for a nonprofit and say, what was it like when you made the decision to transition from the private sector to a nonprofit? Or what was it like when you transitioned from the private sector to a government role? Take advantage of those conversations, because that's just as meaningful from an education standpoint as it is to listen to lectures and actually do the formal education.
Well, thank you for that. And, thanks for being somebody that I get to talk to, because Kimberly's been giving me some suggestions about my own career in the last 6 months, and I'm very grateful for them, because it's good to have people who are encouraging you to stretch your thinking and remember that, you know, the world is full of amazing next opportunities, but we do have to kind of raise our hand and say, okay, I'm ready, and then prepare ourselves appropriately. And I love our conversations, because you've gotten me thinking about good stuff. Well, thank you very much. I hope you've enjoyed this interview with Kimberly Freeman, our Assistant Dean for Diversity Initiatives and Community Relations here at UCLA Anderson, and a proud FEMBA graduate.
Yes.
And we'll be back next week with another podcast. Thanks for listening.